Well, 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 thank you very much, Sherry, for that lovely... I don't know what to call that, undeserved, whatever it is, it is. Thank you. Good morning, everybody. My name is Mildred, and I'm an alcoholic. I belong to the Rocks Glen Traditional Group in Toronto. It's the best group for me. I don't know if it's the best group, but it's the best group for me. My dry date is May the 18th, 1973. I have a sponsor who is dying, and I'm here this morning filled with all kinds of anxiety, so let's get to it. I'm going to talk about powerlessness, so I guess I have to experience it. You know, I love those days when I feel all together and when I feel full of information and spirituality and I'm just going to lay it on and it's all organized and I'm okay with it. This morning I have no idea how I'm going to do this talk and what I'm going to say. It isn't because I haven't tried, I'll tell you that. I'm not one of those people who gets up and says, I'm going to let God talk through me. God can talk through me wherever I am. It doesn't need to be up here. And I do try to organize my thoughts. But I'll tell you what I am thinking about this morning. I'm thinking about something Bob Darrell said to me the very first time he invited me to do a Woodstock. He said, you're not there to tell your story. You're given a step to talk about, and if you're real lucky, you get three. And he said, what I'd like you to do is to take a look at where you were with the beginning in your sobriety with that step and how you have grown in that step and what it means to you today. So that's the framework of what I'm going to say. And I'm going to start at the end. I was such a screwed up individual, I believe, because I didn't have a relationship with God. You know, when people say, oh, well, she's so spiritual, I've had no choice. I can't get along in the third dimension. I don't do third dimension without a fourth dimension reality. It's that simple. And as long as I screwed around in the third dimension, trying to get my way, trying to make life the way I wanted, trying to control and manipulate, I had to drink. Because I'm one of those people, if you put a drink into me, the secret gnawing that Carl Jung talked about gets silenced, and I can function. So what's this business? Well, on page 164, what does he say? Like, is this deal really just about not drinking, or is it something much more? Of course it's about not drinking. I'm not saying that. I have a drinking problem because I have a living problem. And when you put the living problem and I can't control it, I think everybody to an extent is in the same boat. I don't think God made two classes of people, people who have a drinking problem and people who don't have a drinking problem, yes. But people who have a living problem, I think that applies to everybody. And one way or another, I'm one of the lucky ones in this sense that if you put alcohol into me, I quiet down inside and I can function and I feel different and life feels good. And the stuff that was bothering me no longer bothers me. I mean, it would be nice if that were the right solution. But because it isn't the right solution, you know, in the Old Testament it says God is not mocked. And I believe that. You use the wrong solution. You use an egg beater to beat cement, you break the egg beater. You use my life to get your way in the third dimension and walk over people and manipulate and try to control and get your way. It's not what I'm here for. You know, I love what Bill Wilson says in a letter he wrote in 1956 to a woman who had lost her husband, and she was grieving. He said, I get it. I feel for you. But he said, I want to share something with you. He said, I used to believe that the purpose of life was happiness. And he said, I don't believe that anymore. I believe that the purpose of life is growth in God consciousness. You see, and I think, and then he talked about this idea that there are cycles in our lives. There are cycles where we feel perfectly happy and comfortable, and then we have to do the work, and that's the way my life has been. It's been a series of learning experiences. And so that's what I'm here to talk about. I've gone from somebody for whom steps 1, 2, and 3 couldn't get it. That's the beauty of the program. You don't have to get it. As you're here a while, you know, you read, you study, you do, you come to meetings, you do service, you do all those things. I'm tied tightly into Alcoholics Anonymous. I've gone all kinds of places and done all kinds of things, but my roots are here and will be till the day I die. That's what gives me the grounding to do the work that I have had to do to get from the place where 1, 2, and 3 really didn't. I couldn't get it. It was like empty words. What do you mean I'm supposed to turn my will and my life over to the care of God? I don't get it. I go brain dead when you say that. To the place now where I would say 1, 2, and 3 are the essence of the way I live my life. They're the essence that keeps me grounded in 10, 11, and 12, if you will. And anyway, who cares what we call it? It's an organic process. I'm a spiritual being. I believe today that God is everything, and I believe today that on page 55 it says, deep within, every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. That's why I can stand up here. Those are the ideas that have fired me over the years. I took a drink when I was 5. I was an unhappy child. You know, I don't know. I'm reading a book now. It's called A Parenthesis in Eternity. And that really makes sense. That we've been, you know, that we've always had some kind of life and that we're going to have some more life. But here, I've got a body. And then a couple of months ago, I went to hear a talk by a minister I really love. And he said, you know, we all live in two worlds. We live in two worlds simultaneously. And he said, that's the key. He said, we have been raised to believe that this world, this third dimension world, is what we've got to fix. When in reality, it's all about the spirit world. And isn't that what our book is about? I mean, if you read it, you know, Bob, you've often talked about that, how much conversation there is about God in the big book. And you see, Bill knew it. He said this is a spiritual malady. It isn't the malady of drinking alcohol, because you can lock me up, and God knows they locked me up 32 times. And the fact was, after I got out, I drank again. They gave me 38 electroshock treatments. That'll put a light into your life. They'd put me in cold water baths in those days. They'd tie me to the bed, and it wasn't for fun and frolic, believe me. And they gave me all kinds of therapy. We talked about what was wrong, and I loved it because they talked about me. It was great. And they told me what was wrong with you and what you had done wrong so that I was the way I was. And so I've had that experience. And it couldn't stop me. How did I get there? I started drinking when I was 5. Yeah, I'm in this parenthesis in eternity. And I don't know what I'm doing here. And I venture to say that if you study, I personally believe that spiritual truth, understood correctly, is the only really important stuff we need to know. Because if we really get it, it's not about you've got to think, go to a religion, or you've got to think about God or whatever. I believe there's something bigger than I am. You know, I'm going to read you something. It makes my soul happy, so maybe it'll make your soul happy too. It was something written by a scientist. And he compares the world to a living stream. And this is the way he says it. We are patterns of vortices, ripples, waves, splashes, and we have no independent existence as such. No independent existence as such. I don't know how to get along with you because I'm the only one here. I don't care about you. I don't care how you feel. I don't care what's going on with you. I don't really see you because I'm hurting. I'm by 3 years of age, I'm hurting. I have a retarded sister. She's crying and I'm crying. And she's saying, why was I ever born? And I'm saying, why was I ever born? I've got a big family. That family, I thought, loved me. I told them to fix her. I'm 3. And they didn't fix her. Now I know they didn't because they couldn't. But at that time, I thought it was because they wouldn't. And I became fearful and I became angry. We were Roman Catholic. We went to church. So I heard, I don't know if the priest said it or not, I heard that he said God was love and God was power. I'm good to go with that. So I told God what he should do, and that didn't happen right then. And as far as I was concerned, yeah, okay, so there's a God, makes sunsets, makes the aurora borealis. I love the aurora borealis. And the starry sky at night, I loved all of that. But what use are you? And I looked at God as kind of a useless twit. And I'll go to church and I'll say the prayers, but yeah. So at 5, I don't know what to do with life. I'm not making up a story. I remember this. And I had thought about what does eternity mean? What does God mean? What does original sin mean? I'm thinking about this stuff. I've got to find a way to fix it. And then I took a drink and I found the way to fix it. Carl Jung says we have a secret gnawing at the roots of our being. G-N-A-W, a secret gnawing. And I've got a secret gnawing at the roots of my being. That's God talking, saying, wake up, come home, be at peace. I'm here. This is what this deal is about. It's not about this stuff that you're fussing about on the outside. He also said we're God seekers. We're seeking God in every bottle of booze that we drink. And he also said the problem is we're looking for the ox while we're riding the ox. God, he was a smart man, wasn't he? We're looking for the ox while we're riding the ox. So I took a drink, and the bad world went away. Dr. Silkworth says we get a sense of ease and comfort. Yes, ma'am, I got a sense of ease and comfort, and that's what I chased for the next 35 years. Just to save you the mathematics, I'm sober 42 and a half years. I drank when I was 5. I drank for 35 years. On Tuesday, I'm going to be 83, but aren't I a honey of a... I used to kind of be embarrassed by that. Now I think, isn't it wonderful to be 83 and to be healthy and going strong and doing all kinds of things and full of energy? My 30-year-old sponsees, they say, we can't keep up with you. This is good. Okay. So I drank. And I drank whatever. I've had bottles of vanilla. I've drunken perfume. I've had lots of Chanel No. 5. It goes down hard, but you smell good. I have been drunk during Mass. I've been drunk singing Gloria, Alleluia in the choir. I have been drunk at psychiatrist parties. I drank with all kinds of people. So I drank whatever. I drank whenever. I'm not one of those who had to have a little special glass. I've been drunk in dirty toilets. I've drunk with all kinds of people. I've been drunk with a certain bishop on a number of occasions. And so on. And I had an enormous capacity. I got to the point where I had under my bed an 8-ounce water glass, and at night I'd fill it with vodka so that when the morning came and I came to, it was ready with a pitcher of water, and that's how I'd start my day. So, I think you see I'm authentic. What did that life look like? And I'll be quick. I graduated from high school at 14. I'm a smart kid. There was no place at that time for me to go. So I hung around town with a bunch of boys. We all belonged to a big choir. I was wild as they come. They liked the wild one, and we had a great time. And then at 18, I got it into my head, I'm going to a convent. God, you know, be smart. Don't go to a convent if you're drunk. And I was drunk the night I entered, and they took me anyway. And I was there for 15 years. And I have to tell you, in those 15 years, nobody ever mentioned my drinking. It's amazing when you work hard. I was organist in two churches. I had three choirs. I had a 300-voice choir. I taught school. I went to university. I became a famous organist. And on that stuff goes. I could do stuff when I was drunk, as long as I wasn't too drunk. Then I'd go to the church and hide in the confessional. But there are consequences for living like that. The day came, left the convent, thought I was okay. I had my secular clothes back. I was again Sister Mary Eugenia. I was absolved from the vows of poverty, chastity, and obedience. And I thought I was okay. And down to the bars I went, because that's where I knew the booze was. And that's where I found the men, and that's where I found a life of degradation such as I wouldn't even try to explain to you. And after 10 months of living like that, in the swamp of shame that I created, I went to 999 Queen Street, which was Ontario's insane asylum. And I liked it there. It was safe. I didn't have to confront the world. And I had psychiatrists making a big fuss over me. My brother found me there, took me to the West. There I met Dr. Hoffer. And Dr. Hoffer knew Bill Wilson because of the LSD connection. And he said to my doctor, she's alcoholic, should go to AA, and went to AA. I didn't know what AA was. I didn't know you had to do anything in life. I knew you had to do to get degrees and all that kind of stuff. But as far as changing, my dad said my brother got sober and he was transformed. I want some of that. So I come in, I sit down, and I'm waiting to be transformed. 3 weeks go by and nothing has changed. And I feel as lousy inside as I ever did. So I sat in AA because my dad said AA is good. I'm not leaving here and I'm not drinking, but I'm stoned for 5.5 years. That doesn't work too well either. And Chuck Chamberlain used to come out to Prince Albert, which is where I was, with Cece Corrigal and Mac Cheater. Oh, my God, I loved those guys. They were so good to me. And after 5.5 years, I walked out because I couldn't stand this. And I walked out, and I had married my psychiatrist, by the way. I have no idea why you would put me on the program as one of the wise ones. If it's dumb and out of line, it's me. Anyway, I drank again. And when it says, you know, this is progressive, it is. By this time, I'm jumping out of two-story windows and I'm doing all kinds of things. I'm having DTs and convulsions and I can't stop. And the fact is, I don't want to stop. I don't know how to live sober. I don't want to be sober. You know, there's a page in the book that says we tried all these things. I didn't. Why in God's name would an alcoholic want to drink socially? Couldn't figure that one out. Not me. So it's May the 18th and I get picked off the street because my husband and I lost everything. We both started to drink. And the fancy lifestyle was gone. And I spent the last 3 weeks on a park bench. The police picked me up and took me to the psych ward. May the 18th, I woke up there. And on the 20th, the nurse took me to the washroom. And I said to her, I'm a woman of the streets, aren't I? And she said, yes, you are. What are you going to do about it? Big question. And so after breakfast, when I went back to my room, I took an inventory. You know, our book talks about bottom. Had I reached bottom? Of course I'd reached bottom. But bottom without a decision doesn't mean anything. It's just gross, that's all. And that morning, I took an inventory. You know, and I stand here and I want to say this. I was homeless. I was penniless and I was friendless. Like people were done with me. I was so done in this world, and I finally admitted it. I don't like the word surrender too much. There's too much baggage for me. What I like is I gave in. I admitted. I conceded to my innermost self that I couldn't do this life the way I had been doing it. I'd tried medicine, psychiatry, psychology, education, music, men, whatever, convent, whatever, and none of it had worked. You all seemed to be okay. I wasn't. So my conclusion was, it's time. I am sick of this. I'm out of here. And I asked the nurse to get my clothes. See, I think surrender, give in, whatever works for you. I think language, use the language that fits for you. See, and I just said, I don't know. Did I pray? No. Why would I pray to that stupid God who had never done anything for me anyway? Isn't that a lovely attitude? And it was simply a confession. I don't know how to make this world work. Why would I? I don't pay attention to the inner world. I don't know there's an inner world. You know, now Deepak Chopra says the unmanifest writes the script for what happens on the outside. Well, I can tell you the unmanifest was full of anger, hatred, judgment, criticism. I'm nothing, I'm nobody, everybody else, you know, on it goes. She went to get my coat and I had a spiritual experience. I didn't ask for one. See, I don't think that's the way grace works. I don't believe that grace is an unmerited gift. See, our book is so full of truth that once you start to put it together, everything fits. I love these people who become so 2015 sophisticated that now, anonymity is old-fashioned. We now live in a world where we don't need that anymore. We can go out and say, look at me, I'm recovered. That's another one that's going around Toronto, if you want another one. Anyway. I'm entitled to think. As long as the thoughts fit AA philosophy. So, anyway, in a heartbeat, I hadn't asked. See, let's go back to grace. I don't think grace is an unmerited gift. I think grace is the activity of God, and it's here all the time. You know, I got sidetracked with that idea. In the chapter to the agnostics, it says either God is everything or nothing. Well, if God is here, you know, and that's what William James said, you want to know about God, look to your experience. And your experience with God here and now, whole and complete, that's what the deal is. And I just gave in. I think grace is in this room. I think it's filled with the energy of goodness. And when a crack shows, like somebody saying, I don't know how to do life, it rushes in, and at once, the deal is done. Was I changed? No. Was I altered? Yes. The compulsion and the obsession was removed. Did I still think the same? Damn right. Did I still see people the same? You damn right. Did I still feel the same about everything? Yeah, except I knew something had changed. Something had been removed. And in 42 and a half years, I've never struggled, not 2 seconds, with should I take a drink or is this, it was taken. I think that is the activity. See, if we say it's an unmerited gift, that means there are merited gifts. I don't believe that. It says that, man, well, who do you think you are? What have you merited? See, it goes right back to that. So, and a man came to my door. I said, I don't know who you are, I don't know what you are. But I didn't know what had happened, and I just knew that I didn't have to drink anymore. I knew that with assurance. And he came and I said, you'll have to send me somebody, and there was a rap on the door. I've seen things in these 42 and a half years. I don't mean mystical things. That's not me. But life, things that have happened to people. I've had a sponsee I've been working with who's had some difficulties, and I put, given her some spiritual work to do. She called me before I left for Atlanta on Thursday morning, and she said, Mildred, you won't believe this. In the last 2 days, I have had 7 job offers. And she hasn't put in any, and she hasn't put out the word that she wants a job. So, go figure. Go figure. So I went through this hospital treatment center, went to Skid Row, lived on Skid Row. So, you do step one. I admitted I was powerless and that my life is unmanageable. Okay, now I ought to do step two. How do you do step two? Brain dead. Come to believe that there's a power bigger than me that's going to do anything for me. If you said to me, what happened to you the morning of May the 20th? I would have said, I don't know how to explain it. I would have said, this is what happened. But I wouldn't have said, I think I've been touched by the grace of God. I believe that today, and I will say that. But at that time, I didn't. How am I going to do? I love the way step two is written. It says, we come to believe. It doesn't say, and now I believe this. Now I believe in that. Now I, you know what I came to, what I believed in? The psychiatrist at Donwood, he was a Hindu. And he said to me, because he knew I was living on Skid Row. And Tom Ivester and I used to kid because Tom swept the streets and I swept a factory floor to stay alive. And this psychiatrist said, you come and see me once a week. And I would. I had to walk 8 miles because I didn't have enough money to get even a subway token. And I trudged my way there, and I'd sit with him for an hour. He's gone. And I never truthfully got to say, you saved my life. He didn't preach to me. All I remember him saying, we didn't analyze my life. That's not what we did. He was a thread of love from the universe, I believe, that kept me alive because I had nothing. I didn't have decent clothes. I had this crummy room. I didn't have food some days. And I don't regret that. Stripping is stripping. And I really believe that this deal is about God growing our souls. That's really what it is to me. And that means I've got to include you in that so it's not sitting off in the corner singing Om. I came to believe that he was a good man. 6 months, I got into AA. A man asked me to come to a meeting. I fell in love with AA. Got a sponsor. She got drunk. And 2 men stepped up to the plate. And you see, when you look at your life, you see defining things happen there that at the time you may not have seen. These 2 men said, Mildred, you are too sick to stay here if you don't do the steps. And I, with all my training and theology and so on, said, I don't know how. And they said, we'll read the book to you and we'll take you through this. And they did. This isn't a process that works if you're technically perfect. It's a process that works if you will have the humility to do what you're told because you trust the people who you feel are trustworthy. And that's what happened to me. You know, I've read the book many times now, but I did what I was told. And the gift of that, every time I do stuff, later on, I see there's a gift. The gift to me was the night before I went to do my fifth step, they told me to read my fourth to myself and to God. I did it, and the light bulb went on. I was 41 years old at the time, and I had never had a thought that I was the problem. I was a child of the psychologist. We talked about what was wrong with you and how you had impacted me. I didn't know that the unmanifest writes the script for my life. That day I did. And something rolled off my back. I'm not going to say that I don't get annoyed with people and sometimes, but it doesn't last because I really believe at the core of my being, you do not have the power to hurt me. You do not have the power to alter my life because the whole process is very different. I used to blame everybody, and now go free. You're not my problem. And by the same token, I know that I'm not your problem. I have to be careful how I behave so that I don't walk over you. And if I do walk over you, to make that right, that's my job. So, see, I think that's why page 164, he says, see to it that your relationship with him is right. My relationship isn't right with him if it isn't right with you. You can cut that one any way you like. I just don't think it's possible. If I hate you and I judge you and I criticize you and I'm doing all that stuff, I'm not right. And on that promise there, it says, see to it that your relationship with him is right. And then great things will come to pass for you and countless others. In one day, you get 7 job interviews, holy, or requests. I said to God, boy, you're really a show-off today, aren't you? We'll see how that goes. Things happen for a reason. You know, these great scientists, they're all saying the universe is intelligent. It's alive. It hears us. Call it the universe, call it God, call it what you will. I believe that. What I put out there today, I get back some way or other. Not on a one-to-one basis immediately, so I give you $10 and somebody gives me $20. That's not how it works. If I do good, and if I make an effort to be right with God, good things happen. Like one day I walked up to get my boarding pass a couple of weeks ago, and the girl said, hey, she said, I'm going to put you, would you like to sit in business class? I said, sure. And she moved me into business class. Hadn't asked, didn't have to put anything forward for that. Just kind of amazing how this thing happens. So, step 3. So I came to believe in Dr. Maharaj. I came to believe in my group. I came to believe in AA. I came to believe in the book. I came to believe in the steps. I came to believe in what was happening at the meetings. I came to believe in goodness, that good things were, I got a teaching job. I got off Skid Row, etc. I came to believe. I have to tell you that the first 20 years, God was pretty much a word to me. I'm kind of, I'm not ashamed of that. It's the reality. Because I had formed my idea as a child, and it takes what it takes. The one thing I would say to anybody is this: grow where you're planted. Live where you are. You can't be somebody else. You know, I remember when I first would go out and I'd hear Clancy, and I'd want to be like Clancy. And then I'd hear Bob Bazant, and then I'd want to be like Bob, and then I'd see somebody else. I wanted somebody. You can't do that. You got to live and take, this is how I think, this is what's happening, where do I have to change? And then life shoves, moves forward. 7 years sober, I started buying houses. Hadn't saved any money. These are God shots. I believe in God shots. They happen all the time. And I didn't have to sleep with anybody either to buy that first house. And once I bought the first, I was up and running, and I bought many houses, and I built my own house and all that kind of stuff, and it didn't solve what was going on in here. Because now the outside looked good, and I was a good member of A, but I wasn't okay in here. And I retired, and I wasn't ready for that. And I was depressed, and I had a wise sponsor, and he said, you're not going to lie around feeling sorry for yourself. You're going to get up at the regular time, and then we made a plan, and I got four or five volunteer things. I had things to do, and that's what I did. Didn't know what the future held. And one day the phone rang, and it was Father O'Brien, and he said, he's a Jesuit who we just buried. God, I'm losing a lot of people around me. He phoned me and he said, I'd like you to come and give, and I didn't know he existed. He said, I know you exist. He said, people have been talking to me. See, if this universe is intelligent and if it's waiting to do good for us, see, what I learned from that was, here I am, I have no idea what the future is, and it's being prepared. People in the background are phoning Father O'Brien saying, you should contact her. She knows a little bit about spirituality. She's a good teacher. You should get her to give retreats. And so I went, and it was crucial. It was another piece in this puzzle, because I still am not praying, really. And So I'm going to go and give retreats. Yeah, right. And the last morning, an unbelievable thing happened. I'm with 75 women, and I don't cry in front of women. I know how to do a strategic tear in front of a man. But cry in front of women, no thank you. And here I am, and I'm bawling. And I heard myself say, I don't have a friend in the world. I don't have a friend in the world. I'm so lonely. I have lots of acquaintances. And I wasn't making that up. That was true. I see it now. I see what the process has been. How can I have a relationship with God when I am in like this? I'm wrapped around in the way I see the world. I've got to look good on the outside, and that's going to make it okay. I've got to have lots of money. I've got to have a big house, and I've got to do this, and I've got to do that. That's the way I live. Stay away from me. You're not going to find out who I am. I didn't know how to do that. I didn't do that with anybody. And I had a good sponsor. He knew me. He knew me. And so the walls came down. That's a sacred deal, because I'll tell you, when those walls come down, a whole lot of stuff has to change, because now I'm one-to-one with you. It's no longer my walls and your walls. You might have walls, but if I'm operating without walls, I was a different person. I was a chicken without feathers. And I didn't know how to live. And I still remember some of those women who stepped up and said, could we have a cup of coffee? Like you, some of you are looking at me with strange eyes. This was the truth. I did not know how to be real. If I were on a stage, I knew how to do that. If I were the leader, I knew how to do things, but I didn't know how to sit down with you and just talk to you and see you. This is where these things in the big book are so crucial. I rely on that page 55 where it says, deep within every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. It is only there that he may be found. If that is the truth, if we want to use it, we have the change, we have the opportunity to make a difference in the world. I think that the collective consciousness right now is still pretty harsh and full of fear and full of rage and full of hatred and full of all kinds of stuff. And I don't think, if this is true, that we are a pattern of vortices and ripples and waves and splashes, I can bring love into this race consciousness. And I don't think that's, or the acknowledgement that there is good energy. You know, sometimes people say, well, you know, that's just pouring pink paint. Well, it's better to make bombs. Does that do better? And kill people? And murder people? Is that better? I don't think so. See, I think if we look at the history, so anyway, I'll stick back with what I'm saying. Thank you. That changed me a great deal. That whole business, because I had to be different. And my sponsor, spent time with me in helping me learn. I knew how to do social things. I knew that stuff. But he was so good. He taught me how to be real with people. And I really wanted to change. And then Dora died, and that was another big stripping. And I learned something there. You know, it was real to me that when that spirit left, I saw the body. And it was another reminder. The real part of me is not these atoms and molecules. The real part of me is the alive part. And the real part of you is the alive part. And so that was another big opening. And about 6 or 7 years ago, came to me. I was with a bunch of people, and some crisis had happened. I don't know what it was, but I remember 3 or 4 people were crying. And I said, "What are you crying about?" And they said, "Well, we feel sorry for whoever." And I went home and I thought, what's wrong with you? You don't cry. You didn't cry when your brothers and sisters died. You didn't cry for whatever. You think compassion. You think feeling sad for people. You don't feel it. And it seemed to me that that was kind of the last wall in me that had to come down, was my heart. You know, I think back to my whole life and how I've avoided all that. You know, I'm alone now. I don't have man. I still say I'm taking resumes. But I don't have children. I took care of that, made sure that didn't happen. I wanted to be different. I didn't like people. I didn't like the world. I didn't like, you know, Bill says it in step 10 in the 12 and 12. He says, we come here, and he says, we love but a few. We're indifferent to the many so long as they don't cause us any trouble. Indifferent, I can do that, and I hate the rest. I pretty well hated everybody. I see that now, because step three, let's go back to the steps. Step three says, self is the root of the problem. If I'm full of me, there's going to be a problem with you, because then it's all about me. And the book says, I have to be rid of that self, or it's going to kill me. God makes that possible. I didn't write those words. And it says, I have to be rid of this self, and I can't get rid of it by wishing or trying on my own. I have to have God's help. See? And I realized something. My family is mostly gone. We were 10. I have one sister left. All my sister-in-laws and brother-in-laws are dead. And I had a fine family, and at the time I didn't appreciate it, because I'm living in this goofy world where I should be at the Copacabana. I should be a princess. I was just mad that I'm on a farm in Saskatchewan. It didn't matter that my father was wealthy. It didn't matter that my family were smart and competent and all that. The image in me was. And so I began to realize something, that I had never properly allowed myself to be part of that family and realize what a great family I had. What do you do about that? And I began to think about my family and all the stuff that I had put them through. Never once did they criticize me. Not once. What I remember is my older brother, because my dad was dead by this time, taking me aside and saying, Mildred, do you need anything? I wanted to say, yeah, I need your bank account, but I didn't. He said, if you need anything, he said, all you have to do is call, and call collect if you have to. And he said, I'll be there on the next available plane. And I just realized what wonderful people my family were. But I've got 35 nieces and nephews. And again, I hadn't particularly, they're out west, I'm in Toronto. So I went home and we had a dinner and they were there. And they said to me, would you like to say something? We'd like you to say something. And I told them about their mothers and their dads and how wonderful they were. My nieces and nephews were shielded from me driving the car into the bay window. They were shielded from me running around with the married man who was our family banker. They were shielded from my drunkenness, all the terrible things. In a town of 6,000, boy, when you're a well-known family, this reverberates. They didn't get to experience that. My family shielded them. I told them how their brothers and sisters, my big nephews, they sat there and bawled. And they came up to me after a while and they said, we didn't know that about our parents. Thank you for telling us. So now we have a relationship. Some of them, not all of them, but some of them have reached back to me. And, you know, it's just wonderful. And I look forward to going back to see them. That's been a healing in my life. So where am I with step one, two, and three? Those are the things. See, I don't think you can take somebody who thinks like me and sit them down and say, now this is the truth and that is the truth. It's a stripping. It's one day it's this thought, and the next day it's a kindness that you do. That's why, you know, Clancy, you always talk about service and all of that. It's so beautiful because you do that and you don't at times even know that something within you is being changed. And sometimes you just wake up And that's what the program offers us. See, I think we do 1, 2, and 3 to the best of our ability. See, when I started out and I read the language of step 3, I don't to this day like it, because it reminds me of church. I don't know how to give my will and my life over to the care of God. That's me. I don't like the language. If you change it and say, made a decision to do my life differently or to behave the way God would have me, I get that. I can do that. But if you quote that language to me, I've got history in the church. Lots of it. And I don't think God cares about the words. It's the heart. And if the heart is right, it's good. So where does that leave me with step 1? It leaves me in a place where the idea of powerlessness is so comforting. I don't have to run my life today. You know, and if you're new, you might say, get me out of here. I got to throw up over that one. But, you know, live and do this dance, and you'll find the way you express it. That's the way it is for me these days. Not because I'm spiritual or because I'm whatever, because I'm realistic. I've never been able to change anybody, and damn it, I've tried. I've given it my best shot to make you behave so that I would feel the way I want it to feel. And you don't seem to hear me. And the louder I talk, the worse you get. So, or the more unresponsive, I should say. I wake up now and you know, Bob, a couple of years ago, you did this 1, 2, and 3. And I remember you saying, it's this idea that deepens within. It's got me, I'm telling you. I fight it sometimes, sure, but basically I'm glad I don't have to run the world. I'm glad I know kind of what my part is in it. Control hasn't worked, manipulation hasn't worked, and God knows I've given it my best shot. So that to me is what this is about. I can admit today that I am without power. You see, and then people say, well, I've got power. Well, good for you. Where did you get it? And people say, I gave my power away. How would you do that? The book says there is one who has all power. That means something to me. That means that this power within me is the power that I am using. And I have a choice. Sure, I can do stuff. Sure, I can make decisions. But it's because of that power that it's this power within. You know, I went to a funeral not too long ago, and it just came so clear again, the corpse. I used to dance with that man. I used to talk with that man. We used to have all kinds of conversations. And there he is. And he can't talk to me and he can't answer back. And it's done. Who is he? Where is he? That piece of him never was it anyway. It's the spirit. See. So I buy that. There's one who has all power. And everything I do, I'm using the power that is that universal power, that power of God. And when I use it correctly, then life goes easy. It puts the juice, it puts the oil in the wheels, and life just moves along so much easier. And then, that being the case, we come to step 2. I have just described to you some of the things, not in detail, but I have come to believe in what? In a power that's here. In an energy that answers me. In an energy that loves me. In an energy that's good. In an energy that I can participate in. You know, as Arthur Eddington said, the great I love these scientists. Some of them, they're it's right on the money. He said, "We have found a strange footprint on the shores of we don't know where." And I heard the other day that Stephen Hawking is now talking about the mind of God. There was a time he declared himself, and I don't know what the context of that was, but it was another scientist saying that, you know, he had heard that. Our book is full of it, that we come to believe. I can't tell you how I believe. You have to find that yourself. But I think the key ideas for me have been either God is everything or nothing. The idea of a concept, as William James said, look to your experience. If I look to, some of the old ideas, the concepts and ideas, it doesn't help me. But when I really get pushed, I think back to May the 20th and the experience that I had and how that thing worked. I gave in completely and admitted I didn't know how to do it. And this power did for me what I couldn't do for myself. The book says we have had deep and powerful spiritual experiences that have revolutionized the way we see ourselves, the way we see the world, the way we see everything, and actually the way we do everything. That, to me, is what step two is. Step two today excites me. It gives me hope. It allows me to live one day at a time. It allows me to live in the moment. And then comes step three. It's a no-brainer. If I believe what I've just said, am I going to not try to get rid of judgment? Because when I'm looking at you, I'm looking at me. And when I'm thinking about you, I'm thinking about me. I got work to do. So that what's inside here is as clean as possible. That, to me, is what step three is. You know, I love the pages 60 to 61. As I said, and don't go away because that I don't like the wording of step three isn't going to buy the baby a new shirt, I can tell you. But it's not even going to get the Pope stirred up. But, you know, here it says, the first 70 pages, you know, the doctor's opinion. God, isn't that amazing? No wonder he said he got my number. He says you need a vital spiritual experience, not just some flimsy thing, something you can take to the traffic. Something you can take to the grocery store, something you can take to the bank, something you can take to the podium when you're scared. Yeah. And he said, an entire psychic change. You know, I think if we see it right, I often say to sponsees, that's the work. It's getting to see this thing right, because if you get to see it right, you'll do it. Doesn't make it easy. I don't think my life is easy. You know, and the amazing thing is, I mean, I look at Polly and Dave, and, you know, I look at you, Dick, and the sicknesses you've had, and I look at the troubles people have had with children. I mean, I've had a cakewalk, really. All my craziness has been inside my resistance to God, the useless twit. And here it says, our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures make clear three pertinent ideas. That we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. That probably no human power takes 70 pages to say that. In one way or the other. If you didn't get it on this page, see it there. And then, that God could and would if he were sought. And then, look at the next two words. Being convinced, comma. Being convinced of what? all of this, that I'm alcoholic and can't manage my own. If I'm not convinced of that, throw the book away. It ain't going to work if you still think you're going to run it. He says, being convinced, comma, we were at step three, which is that we decided to, here it goes, turn our will and our lives over to God. Whoopee! As we understand him. But, you know, I read these pages over and over. I love them. I don't fight with 60, 61, 62, 63. And I think I'll just close with... I have a friend who's part of the Toronto International Film Festival. And one day he invited me to his office. He said, I want to show you something. And he showed me a video, in two videos, on a split screen. And the one, it was just a three-minute clip. And it wasn't very interesting at all. And then it was the same information on the second screen. And it was exciting and lovely. And he said to me, which one did you like better? And I said, well, the second one. And I said, why is that one so different? You know what he said? He said, because it was a different director. Got it. Got it. You get a different director, you produce a different experience. So I'd like to close reading the promises. We read the promises, page 84. I don't know why we never read. One, for example, see to it that your relationship with him is right, and great things will come to pass for you and countless others. Great things. And then there are the promises at the end of step three. When we sincerely took such a position that God is the principal, God is the director, God is the father, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer. Being all-powerful, he provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. And as we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of his presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, or the hereafter. We were reborn. And that is my prayer for you. Thank you for being such a lover. Thank you. 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 Thank you.